The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, as I mentioned, as we celebrate the Buddha's birthday today, we say usually Buddha's birthday, it's kind of a happy usually idea. But in fact, this celebration is called the Vesak celebration, and it also celebrates the Buddha's awakening when he was about 36, and his passing away when he was about 80. And I find it kind of symbolic that this, you know, that the holiday one day celebrates all these three events, with his awakening approximately halfway between his birth and his death. And his awakening is that which showed him or led him to discover how to live in this world without being in conflict, without being in struggle. And I think it's one of the remarkable possibilities, journeys of any lifetime, anybody, to discover how to live without being in, without any inner conflict at all. There might be outer conflict with the world around us. The Buddha had some in his time. But there's a distinction between what the heart does and how we, well, the concerns we have to think about and reflect on and engage in. And a possibility with practice is to find a heart, an inner life, an inner possibility where we're at peace. And there's no longer a struggle, there's no longer a conflict, there's no longer aversion, there's no longer holding on to something, or there's no longer a feeling of lack of safety or being threatened for this beautiful heart that we have, this beautiful inner quality. And so halfway through his life, the Buddha discovered how to live a life without struggle, without conflict. I think it's quite significant. He talked about a life without dukkha, without suffering. But we keep saying that too often in Buddhism, using the word suffering, we kind of glaze over and the mind goes numb. But to talk about conflict, I think, is also very significant, because the absence of conflict, the absence of struggle, is that it's a strong tendency in religious circles, Buddhist circles, and human circles, to want to hold on to some kind of ideal, to have some definition. If I've become kind of a spiritual person, a realized person, a good person, whatever, then I will be a certain kind of way. I'll always be loving, I'll always be compassionate, I'll always be peaceful. I'll be some kind of way. And as I said earlier, it's like, trying to be too hard something is like trying to grab onto the sound of a bell that you can't grab onto. But to talk about the absence of conflict, the absence of something, it's usually quite significant to experience an inner life that doesn't feel struggling with something or in conflict with itself or a conflict with oneself, or feel like you're bad or unworthy or that you're something wrong with you, or to feel that somehow you have to hide part of who you are. There's many ways in which we struggle and we're in conflict. And to learn how to relax, to shed, to let go of, to overcome the stresses that we live under because of these conflicts and we're not good enough or we have to be more, whatever it might be, is one of the great tasks of a human life. And then as we discover how to live without conflict, then we get to be who we are. And I like to believe that most of that which is unskillful, most of the things we do which are harmful to ourselves and others, come when we're in conflict. And if we've discovered a deep abiding sense of absence of conflict in our heart, absence of struggle, absence of greed, absence of aversion, absence of fear, that what's left is the flowers of our hearts. What's left is the beauty. What's left is that which is good. But what that is and how that manifests in any individual person is going to be very different from person to person. I wouldn't want to try to fit anybody into a Buddhist mold. You know, you're going to be a Buddhist, you have to look like this, or wear these kinds of clothes, behave this kind of way. There are so many different ways of being a human being. I'm just in awe of all the different ways. And each of them is special. Each of them is wonderful in its own way. And I hope that in our doing of Buddhist practice, of mindfulness practice, it not only helps us to discover how to be free of our own conflict, our own struggles, to how to discover how to have a peaceful heart, but also it helps us to see and recognize the specialness and the value and the worth of each human life, each human being, so that we encounter all the differences, all the diversity of ways that human beings can be, that we celebrate them all, we respect them all, we include them all, so that all beings are welcomed into our hearts, or in a certain kind of way, not welcomed, but as I said to the children, that all beings feel they belong in our hearts, with ourselves. We're all in it together. And I think that part of what this practice can hopefully lead to is a real deep recognition of how we are here in a mutually supportive way, and that our open hearts is here that supports other open hearts. And when our hearts are closed, we have our community to help us help it open. And when other people's hearts are closed, that we have our goodwill, our generosity, our kindness, our compassion, that somehow creates a field that allows people to feel safe with their closed heart. And as they feel safe, perhaps they can begin to blossom, to open up. So as part of the Buddhist birthday celebration, part of a Buddhist holiday, is a time to remind ourselves of what's best in our own hearts. And also in Buddhism, what supports that then both expresses that, but also creates a container that supports it. And so we usually chant the refuges, taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. And we also use this occasion to renew a commitment to one of the most beautiful gifts we can give the world and to ourselves, and that is to live by the precepts, the five precepts of not killing, not stealing, not lying, not engaging in sexual misconduct, and not intoxicating the mind. So I think some of you know this, some of you don't. So because some of you might not know it, I'll chant each line first by myself, and then call and response style, you can respond in the second line. And this begins with homage, or paying our respects to the Buddha. Without the Buddha, his practice, and his awakening, we would not be here together as a community for Sunday morning. We would all be somewhere else. Probably, we're doing different things, but it's because of him that we're here, and without him, this wouldn't be happening. So this begins by this first paying of homage. We do it three times. So I'll do it first, the line you repeat. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Saranam gacchami. Buddham saranam Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. And then to recite the five precepts, I'll do half a line in English, and then you can repeat, and then the second half. For the sake of our practice together, I commit myself to not killing.
I commit myself to not killing.
For the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself to not lying.
For the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself to not take what is not given.
For the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself to avoiding sexual misconduct.
For the sake of our practice together,
I commit myself to not intoxicating mind or body.
So when I teach these precepts to children, I don't call them the precepts, I call them the five protections. And so I tell them that when they're babies, they can't do anything for themselves. And all the protection, all their needs are taken care of by the adults. And then slowly, as they grow up, they begin to be able to take care of themselves a little bit more. At some point, they can start walking, and so they can get around a little bit. And some point they can start talking, and that helps. They can take care of themselves. At some point they can do their toilet train, and they can take care of that by themselves. At some point they can take the public bus, or can they walk down to the neighbor's house by themselves. And so all these milestones where they begin taking care of themselves and manage themselves. And at some point when they get old enough, their parents aren't really there anymore to protect them, and they're meant to be adults and out in the world on their own. And even then, we need protection. And they say these five protections are very important protections you can carry with you your whole life. They might seem sometimes to be burdensome until you live with having broken one of them. And then you have to live with the consequences. And usually, then you wish you had kept the protection. They're good, really good protections. And the refuges are important. The refuge of the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha are in many ways important as reminders or inspirations, but one of the importance is the way in which they provide a context, a container, a reference point for our lives. It's a little bit bigger than our own individual efforts, a little bit bigger than that it points back to our own efforts. That we can do this practice, we can walk this path. And that wider context, reference point, is the Buddha and what that represents, the awakening, and the Dharma, the teachings and practices, and the inner natural unfolding that happens as we practice. That's not quite our own doing, but we have to set the conditions for it. And then the Sangha, the community that supports us as well. And so to know that there's a bigger container, bigger reference point for our practice than our own individual efforts sometimes is really crucial and really important. So we feel like we're carried and supported and reminded and guided and by these other qualities. So for those of you who would like, you're welcome now, as we end, to come up here and wash the baby Buddha. As you do that, remember the baby Buddha stands for you, represents you. And as you wash the baby Buddha, that perhaps you're washing that which is most precious, most beautiful, most valuable in your own heart. And to be reminded that that is there for you. It's always there. It's always available, though sometimes it's obscured. So I think that with that, we will end. I would like to ask that those of you who...